You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Here District. I'm Marcus Johnson. I'm the captain of this vessel. I got my first mate, Chris Johnson, joining me. We're joined by TJ Ford, one of the top point guards in college basketball history out of the University of Texas. I had the honor of doing one or two of his college games a long, long time ago. Welcome to Here District, bro. I appreciate you being here.
Always been around a legend.
Oh, well, thank you very much. A legend in my own mind sometimes, man. But we're getting ready to play some golf. You see the background here. We're at Black Wolf Run golf course in Kohler, Wisconsin, about an hour outside of Milwaukee, north of Milwaukee, and looks pretty challenging, man. You got your A game, man. You got your A game with you. What's
man,
going on?
You know, I brought an A game, but it may be a D game. Time, you know.
Well, that's the thing about golf, man. You never know. You know.
No, you know. I have plans to really take lessons and really get involved. Okay. I think for me, just playing golf is more camaraderie, just being with some friends, just kind of getting out there. And I think now I'm kind of getting that stage where I want to get a little bit more competitive and play a little decent because, you know, I get to play with some of my buddies in the league, and these guys are fresh out, but they're so much bigger than me, so I get kind of discouraged because they get up there and just hit the ball super far, and I'm barely hitting the ball, you know, 200 feet. So.
Yeah, well, don't do like I did, man. So I had the same mindset when I was in my early 40s, how I wanted to get out there and get good. So I did a stealth thing. I took lessons on the slide. This really good golf guy, Mackenzie Todd out in Los Angeles, urban golf professionals. Let me give him a shout-out. But I took golf lessons on the slide. Spent a whole bunch of money for a six-week course, man. I'm there like two or three days a week in the simulator doing my thing with all these different gadgets and gizmos, Chris. And I go out and play with my group, and I play worse. I play worse than before.
Why?
Well, I mean, it's such a mental game. You know, the carryover, the amount of hours that I was practicing, you know, really paled in comparison to the amount of hours you got to practice to get better.
Sure.
And I wasn't willing to put in that. But, so my point is that I got to a point where I just realized that it was all about fun. I don't need to play all the tough courses and try and challenge myself. I just want to get out and hit about 10 good shots. 10 good shots to go home, man. But you got 10 good shots in you today?
I got 10. I feel like I'm pretty fair when I get short distance or if I get on the green where I can kind of putt. But I think for me, kind of similar to what you said, I was just trying to have a couple good shots and try not to lose all the balls that I'm going to buy through the old golf course. The 18 holes.
Well, you know, it's for a great cause. It's for the Bucks Foundation. Do a lot of great work in the Milwaukee community. So just the fact that you're here, man, supporting this cause, supporting this organization that you started out with, we really appreciate that. You always show up, man. You always show up for all kinds of events for the Milwaukee Bucks. So why is that? What's going on
with
that?
Well, I mean, for me, you know, coming out of college, and for me, my mentor is Sam Cassell. So him being a Milwaukee Bucks and me being able to watch him, you know, as a fan, as a kid, when they had Ray Allen, they had Big Dog, and then they had Tim Thomas. So
the team that's swishing, running and dishing, the Bucks on a mission. Cassell and Ray hold it down in the back.
Getting drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks is amazing, walking across the stage and doing an interview. And then by the time you get in the back, right, when you have your own special table and you getting ready to talk to all the, you know, the PR people with the Bucks is when I find out that, you know, Sam Cassell, a good friend of mine, a good mentor of mine, is actually in the middle of them asking me, you know, what it's going to feel like to play with a guy.
So that's from Sam's Rocket Day.
Okay. So when you take that and you take, you know, coming here and having success right away, and for me, my rookie year getting paralyzed, and everybody saw that and experienced that. I've done a lot of stuff in the community. Everybody in the Bucks organization helped me accomplish a lot of things of giving back when I was here, whether it was doing stuff in schools, whether it was doing stuff within the neighborhoods and Christmas drives. I just enjoy it. And I think for me, Milwaukee is a place where I still have a lot of friends. I'm still involved. Yeah. And it was the first place that I started my career. And I have a huge fan base here at the same time that supported me through those injuries and know that I gave it my all. So anytime I can be a part of what they're doing from a foundation standpoint, from a charity standpoint, and also just, you know, being able to still be a real a Buck fan. I cherish every moment that I had here as a player. You know, I came here at 21 years old.
Okay. Just 2 years at Texas, too?
I did 2 years at Texas, okay. And Rick Barnes, I did 3 years here. And I just think the support that they gave me for – I missed a year and a half here in my career.
Man, yeah. You know, you got hurt your rookie year. Hurt.
Yep.
Took a bad fall
in February.
Yeah.
Sat out the rest of Maine in that season. Missed my whole sophomore season.
Wow.
In the NBA. So, you know, out of those three years, a year and a half, I was physically hurt.
Right.
And the support system that they provided for me and my family was second to none, and I still cherish it today. And, you know, I just always enjoy being back here in Milwaukee.
And that fall, I mean, so it's not like, so you were six feet. What, a buck?
Yes. At that time,
160. About a buck. But I remember you, because I did your games at Texas. You were one of the, you led the nation in assists, I believe, yes, as a freshman at Texas, playing for Rick Barnes. Your backcourt mate, Royal Ivy, did a great job coaching the South Sudan team in the Olympics that scared the United States in one of those early round games. But man, your toughness at your size, how was that growing up for you? I mean, in terms of what you had to always go up, you know, you walk in the gym and you know, you're not imposing, you're not intimidating visually, but your game was a whole different story.
Well, my older brother was, I mean, obviously he loved basketball and played a lot. So most of the time I was growing up, I was playing with older yeah, players. Most of my friends was my brother friends, and yep, everyone was older than I was. So for me, just growing up, I always played against older people and had to be able to hold my own to get on the court and be able to play. So I just think for me, you know, I got to watch somebody that brought intensity, brought passion to the game, played through whatever, whether he was feeling great, whether he was hurt. And I think for me, as a young kid, watching Isaiah Thomas grow up as a kid and watch that toughness, I emulated, you know, his game and what he brought to the table.
Right.
And I felt like when you look at his toughness and what he provided leadership-wise, that was something that I studied, I guess you can say, for myself. And it was something that I just was constantly just watching it.
And what were you able to incorporate specifically? As a smaller player, I mean, going against the land of the Giants and all those cliches that we hear about, I mean, but in terms of what your approach was, what were you always trying to look to do when you were in TJ attack mode?
I think for me, it's filling out the game. I think for me, when people look at my size, I didn't never feel like every game was kind of the same. I felt like, you know, you come in with a concept, you come in with what everybody's trying to do, and for me, it's like a puzzle.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out which guys is hot, which guys I need to feed for the day. You know, spending time in the locker room with guys, as a point guard, you get to understand who's happy, who's not happy, who's
right,
frustrated. You know, sometimes that could be frustration amongst ourselves as players.
Yep.
And, you know, but most times that frustration is probably dealing with somebody, you know, the leader, which is the coach. So,
You
know, I was kind of the bridge and the middleman to try to make sure that, you know, everybody's getting what they wanted. And plus, for me, you know, once I step on the court, I'm an ultimate competitor and want to give ourselves the best chance to win. So I grew up not playing on the best teams all the time.
Right,
so
right,
I always felt like I had a disadvantage, right? I always felt like I had to weather a storm, whether I had the best time on the team, I had to figure out how to give us the best chance to win. And I think when you look at all these scenarios of my success as a basketball player, most of the teams I played on was not elite teams.
Yeah.
You know, starting, even going to the University of Texas, that wasn't the best college basketball program at that time. And then when you look at
football school, baby, come on,
every day.
Hook them horns.
Yeah, we're number one right now, so we gotta get our basketball team back there. But you know, I think for me, it's just being competitive and being able to just watch basketball as a kid every time it was on TV, and being fortunate enough to watch a Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, and of course, you know, Michael Jordan. So those was, I mean, I didn't miss a game watching those guys.
I believe you.
TJ, I'm curious about your pre-draft process when you came out as a sophomore, pretty young player, right? And what made you decide that you were ready for the league at that time?
Man, my first year at Texas, you know, I came in, and when I found out and discovered I had this spinal stenosis, so I knew about this coming into college.
Oh, wow.
Right? Okay. So okay. I was aware of my health condition coming into the NBA.
Now, was it something that was bothering you on a constant basis, or it was just showed up, man, in x-rays?
When I really think about it, I just remember, like, in February, I remember I had an incident where the ball was a loose ball in high school, and me and this guy runs into each other, and I'm basically – maybe I was out of it. I'm not quite sure, but it was like a stinger. But when I go back in my mind, I probably felt like I wasn't paralyzed during that time.
Yeah.
But I had a stinger super, super bad. And I just remember going, you know, spending time on the court. They took me in the locker room. And I just remember having a stinger really, really bad in my arms. But I kept playing.
Yeah.
Give me some Advils, let's go. And then after the game, I went to the hospital and I found out a stinger. I didn't know what that was at the time.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think for me, when I came into my, you know, coming out as a sophomore, I mean, my freshman year, I didn't train in the summertime because I was doing testing. I was supposed to have surgery and decided not to do it. And I didn't really work hard. I didn't practice hard. You know, I didn't go through drills hard.
Yeah.
Right? I was just
trying to preserve you.
No, I was just balling. Yeah. I was just mentally so locked in that, you know, the things that I didn't do to prepare myself is kind of how, I mean, I got away with it in high school all the way up until that point.
Got it.
And then having that success as a freshman, right, I was like, man, if I turn it up a notch now, then I felt like I could be a top three pick. Mm-hmm. So the ultimate thing for me going back as a sophomore and being all in and changing my shot and really lifting weights and getting after it was to be a top three pick.
Okay.
And the reason I came out, because I was going to be a top three pick. If you take, I mean, Darko, I mean, he wasn't in the picture then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So when you look at the Chris Bosh, Carmelo, those guys, it wasn't talked about somebody comes in and do 1 year.
Right.
And I came into a draft where you had four players right away that – did 1 year, and one guy come from overseas, took those spots. So if those guys wasn't there as the one and done, then
sure.
Right.
Definitely a top three pick.
For sure. What do you think was your biggest adjustment to the NBA after going through what you went through at Texas, like in the first part of that training camp?
Man, they ain't give me the keys. You know, I watched all my counterparts be able to get the keys and be able to play.
Who was your coach? Who was your coach with the Bucks?
Terry Porter.
Okay.
And me and Terry was really, really close.
Okay.
I enjoyed playing with Terry Porter. He was a great coach for me. He helped me a lot. And we did a lot of stuff after practice. So he was a blessing for me. But at the same time, like, I was only really playing half of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I didn't get to just give me the keys like they did in my high school and most of my career. So I had to also learn how to be – you know, kind of take a back seat a little bit. You know, that wasn't easy, but I felt like most of my career was that.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of one of the guys that always had this duo when you really look at it. And most times in the NBA, it wasn't duos, like your 1-2 punch off. You know, your backup was really a backup, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
right. Mm-hmm.
If you look at me, I had Damon Jones, right, a veteran guy who did well. We ended up making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I miss a year. I come back my third year. I'm starting, then you have Mo Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Then I get traded. Then you got I had Jose Calderon. Then I had a Jerry Jackson, Toronto, and a Earl Watson.
Right.
So everybody I had, it was like a duo.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And guys, you know, I give them credit. You know, guys that was behind me. I mean, these guys played at a high level.
Yeah.
So I understand that dynamic as well.
Well, let's go back to draft night. And so one of the iconic commercials running right now is the Carmelo and Kendrick Perkins and you and the big.
I'm all about good advice. Melo, you give horrible advice.
Draft night 2003, here we go.
Are you sure about this, Melo?
Where does the suit end and Perk begin?
Trust me, these suits are timeless classics.
Boxy boys.
How close to reality is that? I mean, y'all had the big box suits and the shoulders and all that, and you couldn't tell you guys y'all weren't looking fly. Yeah,
that was the swag, dude.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. What was that like? What was that like? Just the green room experience. Was there a green room in those days? During the draft.
Yeah,
so,
they
okay.
still had
see, when I got drafted, and I got a picture. I'm gonna show you, but the Commissioner Larry O'Brien wrote the draft order on a whiteboard. Not even a whiteboard, just a just a big pad with a marker. Marcus Johnson, number 3 to the Bucks. Next, you know, but back then they had the green room and the whole shot. So what was that like, man?
The green room was It was cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was it's the experience. I think for me, the green room was also, I mean, you're anxious.
Yeah.
You got a little anxiety because you don't know what to expect. You don't know if your name's getting called. I think for me, growing up, a close friend of mine, you know, Rashard Lewis. He was the first person ever you really watched the draft and watched his experience of being in the green room and then not getting drafted in the first round, going to the second round. Mm. So he kind of still, for me personally, I remember that.
Yeah.
Right? Because he was the best high school player I have ever seen in Houston. You know, he was a senior. I was a freshman, so I never seen anybody with that kind of height. So I was a big fan of his, and if he would have went to college, wherever he would have went, I probably would have followed that path. So watching that, I mean, you're kind of uneasy a little bit, just not knowing what teams are going to do. You know, I worked out for most of the teams that was picked ahead, and you just don't know. But I knew I wasn't going past eighth. I had, I mean, Bucks gave me a guarantee that if I was there, that they was taking me. So that was very relaxing to know.
Do you remember some of the guys you went against in the pre-draft process at all?
I only worked out against two people.
Who?
Kurt Heinrich. I worked out against him my second workout with the Miami Heat because I came back and did another workout.
How'd that go?
Terrible. I was terrible.
Oh, really? Terrible. Okay. All right.
I mean, I went 2.5-3 months without – I mean, all my workouts, I was by myself.
Yeah.
I didn't really train with many people. Got it. When you look at timing, when you go in one-on-one, you know, in Miami, I didn't think they was going to draft me anyway.
Right.
You know what I mean? I kind of, you know, knew the history of Pat Riley, bigger guards and being small, and I was, you know, getting wind that – you know, Dwayne Wade was a guy that he really, really, you know, was favoring. But my workouts in Miami was not good. I mean, it was good that I got through it. But when they got to shooting threes, oh, man, they just told me. I got to that third spot, and it's like, you know what, it's okay, man. It's all good.
Keep working on that.
I said, thank you, man, because I wasn't going to make it around, man. Them balls wasn't getting close to going in.
Yeah.
And then I think the day before the draft, I went back Madison Square Garden, and I remember working out against Reese Gaines, who ended up being a teammate of mine here in Milwaukee, I think my third year.
Okay.
And I did really well against him. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two guys I worked out against. Everything else, I was by myself.
Okay. So now let's fast forward and talk about a young man that the Bucks drafted, second round, Tyler Smith. Yes. You've got some history with him. Talk about that history. Talk about kind of your involvement with him, his development as a player, as a person. I know he and your son pretty close.
Yeah, so Tyler Smith is one of the high-profile kids, one of the better kids that was coming out of Houston. And when he got in high school, the pandemic hit, and I just was working out at my house, and I would rent a gym, and I just invited all the kids that was in my area to the gym and trained them, and we built a relationship with him and his mother. But being able to just guide him through this, you know, tough journey that most of these kids and families are going to experience. You know, he was a kid that was always bigger and taller than everybody, but his skills was not up to the par of what people vision or had him at. So he's a guy that still has so much potential and so much game to you know, expand himself.
When you say that, he
was tall. You know, he was tall. Was so if you put him in a gym, he wasn't going to be the best player on the court.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But he was always ranked the highest. That's how I looked at it.
But right now, I mean, what would he need to improve on the most to become a really, really good, solid, if not all-star caliber player?
I mean, the key for Tyler is just his shooting ability.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what sets him apart is being able to be at his size and be able to shoot the ball. You know, he has a good enough handle for himself. He can really shoot it. He's very athletic.
He's fluid.
He's very, very, very long. Yeah. So I think him, like I explained to him and his mother, you know, this is a great situation for him of being able to learn from one of the best players in the world. When you look at Greek Freak and then you look at the coaching staff that he has and you look at the development here. So I think him being around veteran players, getting a good understanding, because I think for him at the end of the day, of all these kids, but for him is – just keep expanding his basketball knowledge, right? And being able to, when you expand that basketball knowledge, being able to mentally hold that and think about it all the time.
What's the ceiling? How good do you think he could be? Well, I mean, you don't have to give me a name compare, but just he could be
starter. I give you somebody that I think he kind of can model and fit. I mean, he's a better – I think he has a chance to be a better basketball player than him. I look at Tyler Smith and I look at Jared Vanderbilt.
Okay. That's a good one. Okay.
That's a really good one.
If you just put shooting with Jerry Vanderbilt, you got a different player.
Right.
You got you got somebody that's similar to Naj Reid that's in Minnesota. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So when I look at Tyler, I look at a kid that is a good role player. I think he understands spacings. Right. I don't see him as this guy that can go one-on-one. Right. I think he's a team guy. I think he does a lot of different things that will allow him to be successful in the league, for his rebounding, for his blocking shots, for his getting in transition, and being able to stretch the floor. I think him being in the G League, we stress the importance of him showing that physically he can maintain.
Yeah.
And I think at this past year, he picked up some weight. He picked up size and bulked up a little bit. And, you know, he's a young kid that has a desire to keep learning.
Yeah.
He works hard. He stays in the gym. He lives in the gym. And ultimately, he's an awesome kid.
Yes. Okay.
Awesome kid.
And that's key.
To cap this off, when you mentioned something earlier about basketball IQ, basketball knowledge, and improving on that, gaining more. How do guys nowadays improve on that? I know I used to watch videos, old tapes of my dad, read books. Nowadays, how does a guy increase his basketball acumen?
Well, I think these kids is more hands-on. Mm-hmm. I think when you're on the court with them, it's where they can reframe and retain that information. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I think when you look at video, I mean, how much can you really learn if it's a 5-minute, you know, video, yeah. 10 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
We was used to looking at hours. We was used to looking at a full game and rewind that play and look at this play and fast forward. I mean, these guys, it's in shorter windows for them to learn. But I think when you have them on the court and you explaining things to them in depth,
yeah.
I think they can retain that information. And I just think it's about, you know, it's all about the relationship.
Facts. Yeah.
Right? It's all about a player being able to believe in a coach and feel like this coach or trainer have their best interest to help them develop their game and retain that information and that knowledge. I think the biggest thing is getting them to understand, you know, how can you be truthful to them? Mm. And the truthful part is, you know, is trying to get better every day.
Yeah.
And on those days where, you know, you're going to struggle, if things not going in, I think the biggest thing for me is the mentality and the mindset. So I think when you look at the skills, I think we all have skills, man. I think what separates us is who has the best mentality, who has the best mindset, right? Who has the will. And that's something that never can be measured. There's no analytics that can measure your heart, your determination, your thought process, your thinking when you wake up, when you go to bed, what you're doing every day. Like for me, I mean, we're basketball 24/7, yeah. Right? It doesn't
stop.
Cut off. I mean, I could be watching my daughter volleyball game, but I'm gonna think about when a girl jumps. I'm, oh man, that's some good basketball move right there. You know, so for me, it's who can help young players build up their mental capability to weather the storm and what it takes to be a number one in the NBA and to be, you know, a really good player that can last in this league.
You talk about. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm sorry. How difficult do you think that part of it is, though, TJ? Because, you know, this generation is a little different than our generation. The coaching is a little different. So you kind of have to take a different approach to get through to guys. Now, did you change your approach? Because you were probably coached up in a little bit of a different way coming up. Or do you do the same?
I was built the same way. I think the thing is, I think people can also look at players, right? I don't agree with everything, but I feel like it's the difference is it's coaching. I feel like coaches don't want to take you have to put a lot of time into somebody's mental capability. That's spending time with them. That's feeding them. That's inviting them to the house. That's having a couple uncomfortable conversations. That's bringing them into some environment away from their city where they got to do something different. You know, maybe that's fishing. Maybe there's something that they haven't done before as a young adult or a young man.
Yep.
So I think the biggest thing to that is being able to have a trust factor. And you would know. You have coaches that you play for, right, that you are still in contact with today based on them providing a comfort for you.
Yeah.
So I think today's time, kids don't get the comfort from adults like we was able to have.
Absolutely.
Well, you know what I mean?
Well, and I'm giggling because I had a chance to talk with John Wooden a lot, but in the last days before he passed away in 2010, he died, I think, June 4th or so, 99 years old. But I'm talking to Coach TJ, and I'm getting ready to go coach the Belizean national team in a big tournament down in the Caribbean. And so I asked Coach, like, you know, what's the key to being a good coach? If you had to give me one key, Coach, what's the key? And you just touched on it. He said, you got to love your players. Mm. You got to love your players. And you encompass, and you're just taking them fishing, doing things with them, showing them that you care. And once they see that you care, then that opens up and unlocks that mental in terms of what they're willing to accept
on the court
from you on the court in terms of instruction. So, but that's the key, that emotion. It sounds a little hokey, but you got to have love. You got to have love for your players, man.
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge,
yeah,
right? It's a challenge.
You used to always say you don't have to like them all.
No,
you don't have to like them all, like everything they do. And trust me, I did a whole lot at UCLA that he didn't like. But you have to find that love for them some way, somehow. But yeah, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I just look at it as, you know, these kids they're being evaluated so much,
yeah,
going through high school, AAU,
well,
USA basketball.
Likes on Instagram, like going for the likes and all. I mean, the social media thing is pressure.
For me, it's two parts of it. To me, that's just fun stuff. That's like playing a video
okay.
game,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But what people want to talk about is kids going to go through USA basketball. They're going to go to a Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, or Puma circuit. Mm-hmm. Right? They're going to go to all these camps of guys that are saying, hey, I know all these relationships in the NBA, and I'm going to evaluate. I'm going to criticize. And for me, you know, everybody didn't get to see you. So I didn't get to nitpick your game.
Right.
I didn't see you online.
Yeah.
I didn't see all your games. So I didn't really get to see your flaws.
So the highlights.
Right.
So, yeah, the good stuff.
So now you're getting evaluated so much, and you're in the presence of people that now you get to see the flaws. You don't really get to see the improvements as much as you see the flaws.
That's a great point.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes,
so for me, I feel like some of it is too much basketball, and some of it is too much where when do they have time to actually work on their
improvement
game and not play where it touches social media, where it's online.
Work on weaknesses, as a matter of fact. Yeah, work on their weaknesses and then really, really kind of hone in on those weaknesses, which you don't want that film, so that gets all over Instagram or whatever, and people are looking at the nasty part of your game, but you don't get better until you improve the nasty.
And you're they're traveling
so much
more than they're traveling more than a college basketball team.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know what I mean? So just think about, you know, going in and out of an airport, get on the plane. That is not easy.
Yeah,
like that's part of the process of us getting better as a basketball player. And you're asking some of these kids to have that mentality to be able to keep grinding. With some of them, I mean, you're doing it for so long, you're kind of going to burn yourself out, right?
Yeah. But look, let's end it with this, man. You know, you were the consummate point guard. One of the greatest in college basketball history, led the nation in assists as a freshman. John Wooden Award winner after your sophomore year. Dame Lillard, another point guard. Impressions of him, and what do you foresee? He had a tough year last year. And I say that in the context of he was one of, 12 players at 33-34 to average 24-7.
Right.
And we're talking about a tough year.
That's a down year.
That's a down year for Dame, 24-7. but what do you foresee of him this year, and just your overall opinions of
Dame? I love Damian Lillard. You know, I got to watch him in Portland with one of my good friends, LaMarcus Aldridge. You look at, you know, how he had to, you know, overcome so many things as a, you know, high school player going to college and sacrificing. And
little just, recruited, Weber State,
And just becoming one of the best, you know, players in the world, top 75 player, and being able to, you know, get traded. It is hard going from West Coast to East Coast basketball.
Okay.
When you're used to playing a faster pace, it's more shot attempts to come to cold weather when you wake up.
Yeah.
You know, having to get in your car, heat it up. And I think now being in a place where Portland and Milwaukee probably a little similar far as, you know, just more family environment, not much to do when you're going to relax and just really all basketball. Yeah. And I think now he has a time where he's get to really build chemistry and build a relationship with his players. Obviously, when you look at Greek Freak as a leader, as the expectation of guys going to bring it every day, I think Dame probably took a back seat to that. But I think Greek Freak probably his message is like, no, like, yeah, I'm going to lead, but like, you are the leader, and the point guard is always going to be the leader on the team. So I look forward to them playing really, really well this year. I look forward to Dame having an all-star season, and I look forward to them being able to compete for an NBA championship.
Yeah.
And I look forward to him being able to, you know, be in a comfort zone now where he know what it's like, you know, just he know what the environment to live like. He's been in one system for so long, and, you know, the importance of waking up, driving to a game is different.
Yeah.
So I think now he's able to, you know, find his niche of how he prepares himself for his game. And I think that's probably one of the biggest thing he probably had to adjust to last year. I don't think it had anything to do with basketball. I think it had to do with his mental capability of how he prepares and get ready, whether it's the night before, whether that's the ride to the game. All those things play a different part when you're really superstitious and you know, we're part of a routine. I look forward to it. You know, I think the NBA season, these guys coming out right out the bat, and they're going to be ready to play some good basketball.
Ready. Well, and we'll leave it with this. We walked into the practice facility a couple of days ago. Who's the first guy we saw?
Giannis. Working on the squat machine.
The big fella. You know,
on my way getting on the plane yesterday. I'm on Instagram a lot. This guy's arm is to the top of the backboard. His head is over. I don't know if y'all seen that
clip. Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
right.
Wow. He's a special. All right, man. Look, we appreciate you coming by, joining the Here District. We're here at the Milwaukee Bucks Foundation Golf Classic, Black Wolf Run Golf Course in Kohler, Wisconsin. The Here District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, TJ Ford, man, we thank you for joining us. Hit them long, hit them straight, brother. And I'm just going to try to hit them today. That's all I
appreciate
can do.
You, brother.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.